What if there was someone who wanted to help you find a job? Choose Express Employment Professionals, and that's exactly what you'll get. They can help you find work in any industry. With just one interview at Express, you have a connection to endless jobs, whether you want a contract job, a new full-time role, or a summer job. Choose Express Employment Professionals. Express has more than 860 locally owned locations and no fees for job seekers. Visit expresspros.com today to find a location near you.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Wind Down with Jana Kramer and Michael Kaufman, an iHeartRadio podcast.
Hey, guys. We are back home in Nashville.
How's it feel to be back?
When we walked in, it felt like we had been gone. It didn't feel like home. It was a very strange feeling.
It felt like a long time.
It felt like, that's when it felt like a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But I miss Vancouver. I miss our friends there. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I miss it. But I am happy to be back though. And we're in a new studio spot.
Yeah, it was the former kids' playroom, which became my, you know, my dad getaway gaming room.
Because the kids outgrew. I mean, this room is, it's...
It's small.
It's, I mean, it's, yeah. On paper, when we were building this house, and we're like, okay, this will be a nice, pretty good-sized room. And we're like, it's a closet.
It's a closet. So
We're very grateful not being snooty. Just, you know, but with a kid's playroom, this isn't what we kind of imagined. So I was like, we nixed our media room. So mm-hmm. our media room is now the playroom.
Mm-hmm.
And this room, I'm like, what are we going to do with it? And dad's like, well, I could get a love sack. And
I was like, all right, if you're going to put the kids in the media room, which is the room that I used to use, I was like, I at least need to get, you know, a love sack and another TV in this room. She's like, all right, fine. And then after a while now, she's like, okay. There's no productivity going on in this room, so we have to do something productive. So what do we do to our podcast up here? And I was all for it, but I was just worried because JC's room is right across the hall, and we usually do this during nap time.
He would give every excuse to not have this move into his man cave, but we just don't have any other space to put it, and I hate that we have to... You know, put it up, take it down in our bedroom. Again, this all is very like champagne problems. But at the same time, every time I walk past this room, I get this weird like annoyance.
Nothing good is going on in there.
It's like there's a, you know, and there's this big oversized ridiculous love sack in the middle of the room. And I'm just like, this has to change.
So, yeah. So now this is the podcast room. And sometimes I get to play games in here. But it's all good. No, it's actually good because I'm the one that sets everything up and takes everything down. So it's going to be nice just to leave this stuff up.
Yeah. See?
Unless, now, if she starts coming by the room, it's like, look at those cords and stuff everywhere. Why don't you just clean up the podcast stuff? And then when we come back in here to work, you can put it back up.
No. Nope. I'm not going to say that.
I'll go nuts.
I'm not going to say that. I think it's good. Having said that, we need to discuss the love sack.
That ain't going anywhere.
Then the table needs to come down.
Fine.
Where are we going to put the table?
Doesn't matter. Let's have something going.
Oh my goodness.
Tell our listeners before we move on about other stuff, just a little bit about your moving, your experience.
I thought we were going to talk about my breast augmentation. That's about to happen here shortly.
We can talk about that too.
I was like, I showed you, because I didn't tell you that I was like announcing it on socials.
No, you didn't. I found out from a third party.
But the funniest thing was, is one of my girlfriends thought that I had like a nip slip.
Yeah.
Because that was funny. I was like holding my boob. But like, you know, I was showing that, like, obviously I have saggy mom boobs. But I will say I'm excited, but I'm nervous. And because especially everyone's commenting about the BII stuff, which is the breast implant illness.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you know, I've done so much research around it. But when I look at the symptoms, I'm like, it's like depression. Okay, I got
check.
Check. Anxiety.
Check.
So I'm like, I think I have BII without even breast implants in me.
Maybe we'll cure all of that for you.
But it is good to know about it. And, you know, it's good to, you know, it's good to be informed. And I also think people have been nice about it, but also I just don't want, I think it's okay. I think some things just might not work for some people. And if I end up getting a BII and I start feeling more depression or more this, then I'm going to be like, okay, I'm going to get them out.
Mm-hmm.
Which, but I really think, I mean, there's so many women that are fine.
Mm-hmm.
So I just have to like focus on the positive.
Yes.
Are you ready to take care of me?
Always. It's next week.
Yeah. I told Catherine, because poor Catherine, we were talking about it and I was like, well, I can't wait for you to not gasp when I show you my boobs. Because I'll never forget I showed her my boobs after, because look, my areolas just never have gone back down from like after having kids. And she's like, I was like, is this normal? And she goes, and I was like, well, that's not the reaction I wanted.
That's encouraging.
She's like, it's a salami.
I mean, just tell everybody out there.
I mean, I'm, what, who cares?
Yeah.
I'm like, whatever. It's kind of like, and I go back to when I was doing the movie, this kind of goes back to the movie. I'm like changing in the car. You know, changing in the, because I had, it was 80? I think it was 60. Yeah, 60 costume changes in that movie. And most costume changes in a movie is like 25.
Mm-hmm.
I had 60.
Yeah, it's nuts.
And like going back and forth. Well, I didn't have, by the time cameras, like I didn't have time to like go back to my trailer and change. Like I was just like, is there an empty hallway? Mm-hmm. But by the end of the movie, I'm like, you know, things are flying off.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I think it was my driver. She was just like, it's nice that, I'm like, well, look, we all got boobs. We all got, you know, stuff. And it's like, we don't need to sexualize it. And I think that's when that's when I started kind of like having those conversations. Cause I'm like, we don't need to sexualize it. Is I have boobs. You've got boobs. You got a penis. I got a, you know, I'm like, we don't need to be like, ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're fighting against years and years and years of, advertising and marketing towards sexualizing the human body.
I know. Well, I'm just sick of it.
No, I get it. I get it. I mean, unfortunately, sex sells.
Does it anymore though? Because I feel like they're going so overboard. Because it's like every single show. I'm like, where's the seventh heaven? Give me like wholesome seventh heaven.
Yeah.
Like where they don't like have, you know, just every scene. I mean, and don't get me wrong. Like Bridgerton was like my soft porn. Like I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
But then at the same time, I'm like, okay, like, does it have to be every show? Which I was like thrilled that Queen's Gambit didn't have like a throwdown scene. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I just feel like it's so over the top.
It is. And we talked about this a while back where even I just like fast forward some things. I'm just like, why? Like, it's not necessary.
Yeah.
In some parts. And my fear is that like with the success of Bridgerton, there's going to be other shows that try to come out and be that intense.
Yeah. But the movie was good.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun. I'm kind of scared for people to see it because I don't even know how it's going to turn out. I had a total panic attack the day of, and I ended up reaching out to Chantel, my One Tree Hill co-star, and she kind of talked me off the cliff.
What were you having a panic attack about?
I was like, I can't do it. I mean, I know joke was like, I was crying in my trailer day one, like full on crying and just like having a massive panic attack. Cause I'm like, what am I thinking? I can't play this part. I've never like, I'm just the Christmas girl. I'm just the like fluffy, hey, we're having a winter festival in my hometown. But so it was, and then the first scene sucked. So I don't even want to watch that scene. I hope it gets cut, to be honest with you. Cause I was just so nervous.
Right. But, you know, what I'm excited for the final product, because I think it's going to instill the confidence in you that a lot of us around you that support you see. We see, we know you're able to do that. We know you're talented enough to, you know, really act and be a different character, you know, and find parts of that character in yourself and utilize that to your ability. And I think too, is good for you just to kind of to stretch your wings a little bit and not get stuck in that same routine of the Christmas festival and here's this and here's that,
which is great. I love Christmas. I'm not knocking that at all, and I'm grateful for those opportunities.
That's what you've done recently.
Yeah,
more of. I mean, because you haven't done anything like this since I've been with you.
Mm-mm.
You know, so I'm excited for it. I'm excited for you. I think you're gonna impress yourself with how good it turns out.
Easton, are you?
Yes, yes. Ever since I saw you in that prison jumpsuit, I was like, what is going on? Is this Orange is the New Black? What is happening? I can't wait to see this movie.
Yeah, I get arrested. I get shoved into a, like, it's crazy. It's based on a true story. I'm not allowed to like say anything really about it yet, but it really was fun. And I just hope it turns out good. But if not, there's always 12 days of Christmas.
It will. It's going to be great. It's going to be a lot of fun.
And how are you, babe? Like, and we're back home now. You had the kids for such a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm good now to have you around and to be able to like bounce things off of you and stuff. But, you know, we talk about it. It's sometimes, you know, when we used to have help a lot and we'd have the kids for only like an hour or two that day because we had a lot of work stuff or whatever going on. It was almost like it was harder when we only had them a limited amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
But then when we had them all the time, like during most of quarantine, you're not as quick to get aggravated and it just becomes part of your routine. And so that was it for me. It's just like, you're a parent, right? You just step up and that's what you do. It's like, this is my role right now. This is what needs to be done. This is my responsibility. And yeah, you just fall into it.
Do we talk about the blow up fights that we had?
I don't know, man. Those are over and done with. I'd rather leave them there.
Easton popped back on. It's funny. I was doing questions the other day on my Instagram and someone was like, well, there's a few that were like, you looked really sad a few times, like in Canada. And I didn't answer those ones. And then another one, the one I did answer there, they said, not to be nosy, but I did notice that you slept alone a lot in Canada, like at night. Cause I would do like a good night post and it's like, obviously you're not there.
Mm-hmm.
So I answered that question. I was like, well, truthfully, first and foremost, I worked later than normal. And so then I would have to get up or I would want to sleep in. And like, I'm not the person that can like, if I hear anything, an alarm or I'm up. And
so
I
was sleeping in another room out of the kindness of my heart.
I said, but then the other times we were fighting. And mama gets the master.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever successfully kicked you out of the room.
I think one time you tried and I was like, what? You're like, no, you get up.
I've tried.
You've definitely tried, but I don't stop. So then you're just like, I'm getting out of here.
Screw it. I'm going to bed. I'm tired.
They were bad, though. They were bad blowups.
Yeah.
Why do you think we had the blowups?
I mean, I think there's, no matter what, like going into a situation like that and you accepting your roles, I think, you know, just like, you know, when there's someone in the relationship that stays home with the kids all day, right? And whether it's the wife or the husband come home, whoever's going to work comes home it's like they're tired from work. Well, the other one's tired from being with the kids. And it's that kind of push and pull of who's more tired. Well, I've been with the kids all day, so you step up. Well, I've been working all day. So I think there's some of that light resentment of you're freaking exhausted. Like, you're working all day. You know, you're like maybe needed more things from me. And then I'm with the kids and it's hard just to like pop by and see you from time to time because it's with both kids and bringing them and packing stuff. And so it's just, I think there is some of that and the fact that we weren't able to see each other and connect.
So was my text message to you accurate then? Were like you wanted to be in the supportive role, but at the same time, you had a resentment of being in that role?
No, it was more about like resentment. I felt like lack of respect of like what I was doing, where
even though I did say many times like thanks for holding it down.
Yeah, because I think at times, you know, when you had your breaks and I would bring the kids, that's great because you got to have time with them. But when it was when like you're going to work and you'd have to do hair and makeup and you wanted the kids to come for a little bit, it's like, all right, yeah, Jolie's cool for a minute. Like, she's fine sitting in like the makeup chair and getting her hair and makeup done or something too. But Jason and I sitting in the trailer, in a 10x10 trailer for an hour, like that's not, you know, that's not fun for him or I. And yeah, you get to kind of have some time, but not really. So it's for me, it was like, if you want some time, let's do it on your break, which I think pretty much every break that you had that lined up with the kid's schedule, I brought them. But it's like some of those other times I'm like, man, does she not realize that, like, it is hard to just come by and sit here while she gets to steal a few minutes here and there with the kids? Where I like start having this thought, I'm like, is that selfish of her? Like, is she being so, like, I know how you are. Like, I know you want to see the kids so bad. It's not really from a selfish standpoint, but you know, it's doing all that and having the kids and taking it back and forth and having their schedule is tough too. So I think at times, like, it's like I was expected to just come whenever you wanted me, come whenever you needed me. And then, okay, I'm done with you guys. I got to go work, go home, you know? So I think that's what it was. It wasn't about resentment about being in that role. I embraced that role going into this. Mm-hmm. I think it was, and you did verbally affirm me several times. And I tried to do the same to you because I know, I mean, that's one thing, right? Like, people, even if they listen to this and you complain about how hard it was or whatever, it's like people do not realize unless they spend a whole day on set, what actors, like what you guys have to go through, how long the days are, how exhausting it is, how much you have to learn, how many moving parts there are. You could do things perfect five times, but every time there's someone else messing up, the cameraman's messing up, this is in out of place or whatever. So there's a lot that you have to deal with and you're exhausted. And so, you know, I tried to do my best to support you and be there. And then when you weren't feeling supported or appreciated in things, like, you know, that was hard too, because I was trying to make a point to be supportive. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I see those gears working.
I'm just listening. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. It's just, there's always the other side, you know, which I think is hard in these kind of situations.
For sure. Which is exactly what I was saying. Why I compared it to just the daily husband and wife, whoever is again, working or not. You, each person has those feelings of just, you want the other person to see it your way, but it's just not really the case. Because you both are in different shoes. You're both in different situations. Mm-hmm. So you can't fully respect the other person's exhaustion or or whatever. So I think that was the thing. It was like we had that underlying. There was, again, your schedule was all whacked out of place. So we didn't have the connection and time that we really wanted. By the time the weekend came, you know, we didn't always get along and we just try to make it about family time. And so, you know, that was just tough.
Can I ask you if you've thought about like when you get to that point, the mean words come from?
Well, that has something to do. That fight was about something else.
Well, it was still mean on the other stuff too, though. I'm just curious because I mean I know where like mine, like when I get upset and mm-hmm. mean, or I get like because it's, you know, I don't feel like that respect either, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But like I don't want to like hurt you, so I'm just like curious, like if anything like has come up for you recently that like you've realized like, oh, like why you go there. Cause I think some people want to understand why someone says things, they don't mean it, but when they say it, it like hurts the person.
Mm-hmm.
And for like me not to hold, or the people to hold on to it. Do you see what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. It's my, you know, it's my ultimate, like, it's my last defense.
To be respected. Or heard.
I'm talking about the mean words.
No, I'm saying, is it to be, because you want to be heard? Like, what is it, like, that you're, like, wanting? Like, when someone's mean to their partner with words, like, what is it really, like, what are they really asking for? Is it to be heard? Because I want to understand, too. So that the person, me, and other people don't take it personal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's being heard and being respected. It's when I try to use my words, right? Because I never just immediately go there. It's always as we start to argue, as we start to have conflict.
Well, and we always want to, when we fight, we both want to be heard. And so we're just saying it louder.
Yeah, we
escalate. Like, and our therapist watches us. He literally is like, I'm watching it happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, but hear me. And then it just keeps going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, and when it gets to that place, I'm not being heard. I'm not being respected. And even when I try to say it from a good place, it's just being devalued. I'm just like, it's just like, you know, hitting the red button. I don't know what else to do. And it's unhealthy, and I'm trying to kick all that. And it's been a long time since I've used mean words and gotten mean like that. And it sucks. You know, I feel bad that I did.
What's something that, like, you know, because we've all said mean words, like, what's something that, like, maybe your therapist has told you, or like that you see, like, what you can do to not say mean words? Because I know for me, like, for me not to be aggressive, like, I have to physically walk away. And I'm not saying this, I'm not, hope you know, I'm not trying to, like, I'm saying, like, we both have so much to work on, mm-hmm. you know? I'm just, like, trying to understand that more, because I think, like, what's from the big bomb fight that we kind of had in Vancouver, the words are what have stayed with me.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't mean those, but those no. are the worst things that stay with someone. So it's like, I don't want to, you know what I'm saying? Do you know what I'm trying to say? Like, I don't want people to have to keep those in their brains, because
mm-hmm.
that's not the truth. So it's like, okay, if you can spin it and try to understand your partner.
But there's no understanding or justifying, like,
no, but
mean words being said, right? And you and I are different. You said some mean words and mean things to me, and I don't hold on to those like you do. But we're different people, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You said mean things. You have that look like, no, I didn't. I'm like, yeah, you do. Yeah, you did.
I said mean things, but you cut deep. Like, you take my mean words, like, I'm like, you're an a-hole, and you're like, you're a like, where it's like, you take it like, I'm like high school mean. You're like
x-rated mean.
Yeah. Now, neither are right. That's the thing, neither are right. 0% neither are right. And that's the thing, like, you know, name calling, those things are bad, but it's like, you know what you do.
Mm-hmm. No, and it's just me trying to force the upper hand or force respect, which is just the bad way to do it. I mean, it's, you know, I've tried to do things like say I'm not in a good place to talk, but you don't really hear that. You know, I tried that a few times. So I probably should have just gotten up and walked away. Because in the big blow up at the beginning of it, I was like, I'm not in a place to talk. And you kept going. I said, I'm not in a place to talk. I said it louder and louder, and you kept going.
But you said the thing before. And then I went down. I was like, oh, no. You do not get to call. Like that's, you didn't say you didn't want to talk then. At that point, I was like, I don't care. We're going. Because I was offline then after that comment. Welcome to the train wreck, guys. Mm-hmm. It's Wind Down with Jana and Mike. We can't wait to be back with another new guest. I think next week, though, we have a guest coming on about, what was their book is called? How Not to Fight?
Everyone Fights. Or.
But I think, look, the moral of the story is there are going to be nights where Mike is maybe not in bed. We might have blow-ups.
Everybody fights.
I think it's just, you don't want blow-ups all the freaking time. You don't want them weekly. You don't want them monthly, you know, but we might have a big, I mean, I think there was a lot of factors that went into it, but we have to now from that, like go to our therapist and dissect things and process them.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's underlying things that, you know, we're feeling and we need to discuss it and not hold on to it. Because if you're holding on to any underlying stuff, it's just going to have, you're going to have another blow up because you're just shoving things down for the next big blow up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not healthy. So if you're holding on to things.
No, it's tough, right? Because like maybe I had things coming up during the time up there, but it's like, I'm not going to, have enough exactly. on your plate. I'm not going to bring that to you right now. And then it's like, you say something kind of attacking me, and then that's like opens that can. I'm like, what the f-?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I've been holding on to my shit so I don't bother you or stress you out.
Yeah.
You know, wait till we get back home and have a couple session, and here you are saying shit to me, and I just want to blow up.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, I mean, again, that's all I was saying at the end. Like, I'm so excited to get home because I just want to get back to not the like, yeah, a routine of just having time together, having fun together, being connected, you know, sleeping in the same bed and, you know.
Well, and I think because a lot of those nights were just because I needed to sleep in.
Yeah,
because
90% of them.
But that's disconnecting us not being in the same bed.
Oh, I know.
And like this morning you went back to being like, I appreciate you. And I'm like, oh, in my heart, I was like, oh, I forgot what that felt like to like say those words to each other. Cause it's such a nice way to start the day.
Mm-hmm.
And we weren't able to start the day like that.
No.
It's almost like we just were starting the day just frustrated, annoyed and tired and just.
Cause we're just on different schedules.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hard.
So moral of the story, try not to hold things in. Communicate from a good place and don't be high school Jana or college Mike.
All right, let's take a break and we'll get the Zen Mamas.
Oh, it's all a good fight. Let's do it.
Mother's Day is coming, and mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the story of BitConned.
Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of Bitcoin, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Every family has skeletons in their closet. Mine certainly does. Ones that go back 100 years and reach thousands of miles back to our hometown in Sicily. Ever since I can remember, my relatives told the story of my great-great-grandmother who was killed by the mafia. I'm Joe Piazza, and in my new podcast, I'm taking on a generational vendetta, visiting the scene of the crime, confronting mafia experts, tracking down Italian officials, and even consulting mediums to set the record straight on my great-great-grandmother's mysterious disappearance. And in between the fact-finding missions, I'll be drinking a lot of wine and eating all of the pasta. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so let's welcome our guests. We have Teresa Palmer and Sarah Olson, who are the Zen Mamas. They're both two successful, very successful actresses and moms with multiple children. So, you know, we're just talking to you a little bit. And Teresa, you have 5 kids, including the one in your belly. And Sarah, how many do you have?
I have 3 kids. I just had a daughter back in September. She's 6 months old now.
And that was your rainbow baby, right?
Yes, that was my rainbow baby.
That's just like the best, right? It's like you forget. It's not that you don't forget. It's not that you forget the pain, but just like it makes sense in a weird way.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's definitely. I think it for me personally, it made for a little bit more of an anxious pregnancy, mm-hmm. You know, after having a loss. And then, I mean, I was very excited, but I was also experiencing this pregnancy during the pandemic. So mm-hmm. That anxiety of the pandemic on top of also I had previously had a loss. And then, but, you know, once I had her, it was just like, it couldn't have been mm-hmm. a better mix of happy hormones. Cause I was just like, oh my, I was blown away.
For sure. It's one of those things where I just found out one of my girlfriends is pregnant and this is going to be her rainbow baby. And I'm like, look, just so you know, it is normal to wipe every time you go to the bathroom and think it's going to be blood. Like it's
absolutely.
Just until you're 38, 39 weeks pregnant, you will do that. And that's normal. And it's, I could tell you a million things, but you're not going to stop thinking that. It's the worst.
Yeah, and I mean,
I even did it today. I was like, let mm-hmm. me just check. Oh my God, I guess she's fine. And I'm 17 weeks pregnant. It just doesn't go away, does it?
No. But I think again, like once you know, you have the baby and you can feel that zen. But how do you guys find your zen?
Oh, well, it's funny. We have a probably a different definition of the term Zen than what a lot of people do. I think that word can be synonymous with you know, the perfect family. Everyone's so well balanced. Children wear linen and frolic through fields of daisies. You know, it's definitely not, that gives such a false sense of reality. And I think we probably have Instagram to blame for that. But our version of Zen is just really embracing the chaos and the unexpected moments, the peaks and valleys of parenting, and just trying to find those moments of calm in amongst it all, liberating ourselves from the perfect picture of how our parenting should look. Mm-hmm. So that's really what we call it Zen-ish.
Zen-ish.
So you guys first started like the whole Zen Mama thing. It all started as a blog, correct? And website?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Teresa had been doing Your Zen Life. She started that website. When did you start that, Teresa?
That would have been like 2010 with Phoebe Tonkin. We did that. That was like a wellness website. Exercise and eating healthy and, you know, trying to find balance. And then of course, when we became parents, I think for me, it sort of just organically shifted into, oh, now how do I do all those things and be a mother? Mm-hmm. And that's where Sarah came in, because she was really interested in doing a blog as well. And we just sort of put these ideas together and then our community was born.
That's fantastic.
So in the community, what can, like, well, first of all, where can, you know, other mamas find the community? And then also, like, what is, you know, what's one thing that, is it, you know, just parenting? Is it also relational stuff? What else can, like, they find in the community?
Sure. So it's yourzenmama.com. Mm-hmm. And then we have Instagram and Facebook as well, as at yourzenmama. And, you know, when Teresa and I started this space, we were looking for, you know, who's in our like community that we can talk to and reach out to, because, my family doesn't live here in Los Angeles where I live, and Teresa, like, she travels nonstop for work. So, you know, you're talking to her. She's in Estonia shooting a movie. She was just here in LA, like a few weeks ago. And then a few weeks before that, she was in Wales and then Australia. So, you know, it's so hard when you're not planted somewhere and you have your community of people around you. And so when we first became mothers, we were kind of the first of our friends to do that. And we really longed for a community setting, you know, other women to share ideas and stories. And so when you come to Yours and Mama, you can read articles about everything from someone who's wanting to be a mother and going on that, you know, fertility journey to breastfeeding multiple kids at the same time, you know, tandem breastfeeding. You can read articles about pregnancy loss. And that's, you know, kind of where our book came into play, is that we, you know, took all of that information and kind of developed it into a book where you can, you know, it's from the moment you first have that idea, oh, I think I want to be a parent, to all the way through, like, what does that look like? What kind of parent do I want to be? Mm-hmm. So every step of the journey along the way. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. For both of you, for being traveling, working mothers, you know, what kind of advice do you have, or in your experience, have you gone through for other women out there and other families out there dealing with a career that does take you all over? Because, you know, we just got back from Vancouver with Jana being up there filming for 6 weeks, and it's, you know, taking both the kids, and I come from more of a conservative mindset of, all right, once the kids are in school, you're not missing a day and you can't be traveling. And right. Mama Bear here is like, like, I need my babies with me. So Like, how have you guys personally managed that whole thing?
We have a rule that the family sticks together. Yeah. I see your little happy dance over there.
Yes. But it's important. It's so important for the whole crew. It is.
Yeah. And I came to that decision when my son was little. I was working with an actress and she said, you know, one of my regrets is that I left my child, you know, with her father when I would go off and film for these long stretches of time. And her daughter had now grown up. And she said, Mom, why didn't you just bring me with you? Like, bring me with you. Let me adventure and have this global experience and keep us as a family unit. And she that was one of the really most important pieces of advice I got. This is before my son was in school. And she said, bring those babies with you and bring them everywhere and keep that family unit together. And school will figure itself out. Mm-hmm. You will learn from the world. You will learn from those experiences. You can homeschool. You can do so many amazing creative things with the kids in terms of learning and just being in different surroundings is, you know, they're absorbing so much. And I find that we're in Estonia right now and, you know, today as a part of his lesson, I was like, all right, let's go outside and, you know, throw snowballs and we can talk about temperature and how other cultures live. And this is how, you know, these families who live in such a wintry environment, this is how they have fun. And look mm-hmm. at these toboggans. And so you find yourself learning on the go. So that's our family rule. We just stick together. My husband travels with us. My mum tries to travel with us as well as much as she can. And we just make it work. We try and, you know, he'll work for a period of time and then I'll work for a period of time. So far, so good. But, you know, things might change. And then we will have that conversation when those things start to seem like they're shifting.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, Jana, what about you?
I was going to say that I tried it the other way. We've always stuck together as a family, but my husband's been on a show here in Los Angeles for like 12 years, mm-hmm. this show called NCIS LA. And they work, you know, 11 months out of the year here. And so I have had, you know, to go and travel outside of LA to work quite a few times. And then when we had our son, I went to shoot a movie outside of LA and it was really hard. It was really hard for Eric. I felt bad for him because I was taking our son somewhere else and, you know, he would come and visit, but then he would have to go back and he wouldn't see him for a couple of weeks. And he's such a present dad, you know, and he just, I think, gets so excited every day to see the kids when he comes home. So, you know, that was really tough on him. And then this last time when I went to shoot in Toronto, and it was in 2019. And I was like, okay, I've never done this before, but I'm going to like try to make a deal where I go and I can only be there for like 3 days at a time. And then I'll fly back every single week.
It's exhausting.
Right? It was a nightmare. I mean, shooting the show was amazing, but at the same time, it came with this massive heartache of like, I'm away from my kids. I'm completely exhausted because I'm getting on a flight. The moment I say my last line, I'm racing to the airport, flying home, going to be with my kids for a couple of days. And then I'm racing back again. And every single week for almost 4 months, I flew back and forth to Toronto.
Oh.
And it was great airline miles, amazing, like so many, but it was a nightmare. And I think something that this last year has taught us where we've sort of had to park it and, you know, our industry was shut down for a while was, you know, what is it that I really want? Do I want to go out of town and shoot a show or a movie? Or do I just want to like try to work here? And then, you know, when Eric's off, if we can shoot something out of town, great. But what's most important, and I agree with all of you, which is like keeping our family unit together. That has been, you know, the silver lining is being able to be this little unit during this time.
Yeah. So. And I mean, I obviously agree with you girls because I just think because we're not good when we're apart.
No, we're not.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
The kids aren't either, you know, like it's, and mm-hmm. when I'm not with my kids for 3 days, like I'm a psycho and I'm not good at work and I'm not like, I'm not fun to be around on set. Like even when I didn't see the kids for like the one day you guys couldn't come see me on set and I didn't see them all day. I was just like, I'm a terrible mom. I'm crying in my trailer. Like, what am I, why mm-hmm. am I even doing this? Like, why am I acting? Like, why am I away from my kids? Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, it's that mom guilt that guys, and I'm not trying to be mean, but like, you can be like, no, we're staying here and they're going to, you know, public school, they can only miss 8 days. So I'm like, that means that then mom can't work and mm-hmm. I can't not be with my kids. Like I know dads, Michael, my husband is a very hands-on dad, like so hands-on, just like y'all's husbands. But it's like, it's still, but we still need them to with us.
I think, I think that's where, at least for me personally, I don't know if I can speak for all husbands. I try not to take it personally because I kind of do, where I'm like, the kids are with the second best person they could possibly be with. They're with their father. Like, it's not like you're leaving them and they're with a nanny or a babysitter. They're with dad. So I was like, I get that you want to see them, but it's going to be okay. I promise. Like, they're with daddy. And it's, and I, so again, a part of me takes it personally when really I just have to let that go and realize, no, this is just a mom being a mom and she needs her babies no matter who.
And it's really not about you. It's not about the trust either. It's like, there's no one I would trust my kids with more than my husband. Like, he's amazing. And I love that. It's just that for, you know, it's more about me and how I can operate and, you know, function. Is like, I can't function without,
I had that conversation with Mark about a week and a half ago, because he's not with us in Estonia, he's back in LA, and he was like, how about this time we try something where I take the boys and you have Poet? And I was like, absolutely not. And he was like, But I'm their dad and they'd have so much fun with me. And I was like, I actually won't be able to function. I won't be. He's like, you'd have the space to do your work. I was like, I won't be doing my work. I will quit my job. I will say, I can't handle this. I'm coming back home. And so I was like, I win. I'm taking the children.
Poor guy is trying to be super supportive.
I know.
And he was like, all right, whatever you need.
Mother's Day is coming, and mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
I never thought I'd take my three young kids to Sicily to solve a century-old mystery. But that's what I'm doing in my new podcast, The Sicilian Inheritance. Join us as we travel thousands of miles on the beautiful and crazy island of Sicily, as I trace my roots back through a mystery for the ages and untangle clues within my family's origin story, which has morphed like a game of telephone through the generations. Was our family matriarch killed in a land deal gone wrong? Or was it by the Sicilian mafia? A lover's quarrel? Or was she, as my father believed, a witch? Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Becca Tilly and Tanya Rad.
Tanya Rad, that's me.
Yeah, and we have a podcast called Scrubbing In.
Yeah, we do. We are two best friends, and we love
Grey's Anatomy.
Hence the name Scrubbing In.
Exactly. And this week, we have one of Grey's Anatomy's very own, Anthony Hill, who plays Winston, on the podcast to chat about what's been going on.
If you follow Grey's Anatomy, you know that, I mean, there's just a lot to talk about. There are sudden deaths. People are coming back this season. There's a whole lot going on.
It is a huge season for Grey's Anatomy. So I highly suggest you tune in.
And you're not just going to get Grey's Anatomy. I mean, we have girl talk. It's just girl talk.
It's like you're talking with your best friends on the couch.
Yeah, except not with your best friends. You're talking with us.
Your virtual best friends.
We're your virtual BFFs. That's right. So listen to Scrubbing In on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Do your husbands ever have to force you to do something? Because when I was in Vancouver, the director and a few of the castmates were like, let's all go to dinner. And I'm like, oh, well, that's on my day off. And like, I really need to put like the kids down. And, you know, Michael's like, go to dinner. But I was like getting hives, like being like, but I really should like put them down. Right, babe? Like, I need to come home.
She's like, you've had to put them down every night this week. I'm like, yeah. And I'll put them down again. And guess what? They've woken up every morning and I can manage to put them down again.
And I was like, and I know you can, but I think it's just like, he has to literally force me to like do something for myself.
Yes. Exactly the same. And I feel guilty. I'm like, oh, I haven't done bedtime with them at all this week. And that's my one time to go home and do bedtime. And I'm such a homebody as well. So I'm the same. My husband's like, get out there, like go do the cast dinner, go meet the people you're working with, like interact with them. Like, what, you still have an identity. You are still a woman behind the mother. Go.
What in your guys' book, what was the hardest thing for you to write that you still have a hard time with personally?
That's a good question.
Yes.
I know. I really like that one. I'm like, what? You know, it's funny because I feel like throughout the writing process, you learn so much. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so much that you're researching and you're going inward as well to figure out like, how do I feel about this? And what does this mean to me? And I think you work through a lot. You know, Teresa and I wrote this book over the course of like, we did the Australian edition first. Teresa was, you just had the baby? No, you were pregnant.
I was pregnant, then had the baby.
Yeah, then
like
had the baby.
You, like you the second
yeah,
time.
Exactly. And she was like riding in the back of a RV going a cross-country trip with her family. And then when we were doing the US edition, I was super pregnant. It was in the pandemic. And I'm riding from an Airstream sitting outside of a barn in Idaho. And, you know, it's just funny because you're like, you're having these experiences, staying up late at night, the children are sleeping, you know, you're typing away and you're like, yeah, this is kind of it. This is a big part of the book, which is just like finding those moments, of peace in all of it. And what is it when you make time for yourself, when you connect with your partner, when you connect with your kids, you know? And so I think through our process, we kind of like learned a lot, and it was very important for us to write a chapter all on its own about pregnancy loss, which I think is probably the most impactful chapter for us, the two of us, during that experience, because Teresa can speak to this, but she started writing it in her voice because she had experienced pregnancy loss at the time.
Yeah. And that was certainly, to answer your question, that was a lot of reopening of old wounds. So just kind of taking myself back there and being back in that ultrasound room and hearing that news and sort of the like immediate crashing down of the dream of who this little person would be. I mean, you already create what they look like and their star sign and what the age gap's going to be between your children, and sort of created this little person in your mind, and then that sort of it just gets ripped away from you. So I would say for me, the most challenging part was the reopening of old wounds. And then something quite profound happened to us, which was that I had written, we did chapter by chapter. So Sarah would tackle, she tackled the pregnancy chapter and I tackled pregnancy loss. And then we would sort of switch chapters and add our own voice to the other person's chapter. And, you know, I sent her through the chapter, and as she was sort of reading through it, Sarah experienced her own pregnancy loss. And it was so, it was such a moment that just takes your breath away, because the very reason we wrote this chapter was these moments that were happening in real time to Sarah. And she was able to read through the words and feel comforted and held. And we just knew, oh, this is the reason why we wrote this.
Wow.
Well, I mean, there's a million girls out there that are going to be so thankful for this book. So I'm excited to get this episode out and get this, you know, share this book, because, yeah, I mean, there's, it's one of my most asked questions, but mine is our relationship is, you know, how do you deal with miscarriage, you know, because it's not easy and it feels so isolating. So, you know, I appreciate you girls putting your words on paper and so that all these women and, you know, men too can maybe read to understand, and because you guys go through your own battle as well.
Yeah. I think for us, I mean, it's any knowledge that y'all get helps us, because we just want to understand you. Right. Like, we're trying to be supportive. We're trying to, you know, kind of manage everything, and while also having our own, and, you know, separate independent feelings. But it's hard to be there for somebody when you don't know what's going on. And so any kind of literature, any kind of, you know, people opening up about it, if it helps you, it helps us, because then you guys will start talking about it. We'll understand more. We can be a better support system, because that's like an ultimate helpless feeling. Right. Like, how do we make that better? And as your husbands, we just want to protect and make it better immediately. But there's no way to do that.
Absolutely. I do remember my husband, there being that moment, you know, I was reading through that chapter of the book and I called Teresa and I'm like fully crying and I'm telling her everything. And I was like, you know, this, these reading these words is helping me so much, because truly connecting with other women and hearing their stories was the thing that I think made me feel the most held through that process. And, but I remember there being a moment when I like looked at my husband, who had been like, okay, if, you know, if this, if that happens, everything will be okay. And we'll just try again. And, you know, he has that thing that men have, which is the like, all right, how do we soldier through and like, let's fix it. And, you know, guys are such doers. And so in that moment, I saw him start off that way. And then I think the next morning he woke up and I could tell, like, it really hit him. And he even said, you know, this, I didn't know that this would be so hard for me. And he was like, this is, I'm really sad. And I was like, me too. I'm really sad too. And these, you know, this chapter that Teresa wrote is really helpful. And so I went back and actually added a little thing to the end of that chapter that said, you know, while we were in the editing process, I experienced pregnancy loss. And this was something that became very important for us to put out into the world, because it helped me.
Let me add, I want to ask all three of you this, because even us going through miscarriages ourselves, I've never really asked, like, what is it about a miscarriage feels so, like, why does it feel so secretive, so isolating as an experience, like, for women?
I'll let you girls go first.
Well, I just think there's been this really long-held stigma surrounding loss. And we actually, in our book, sort of break down the terminology miscarriage. And even just that word implies that it's the fault of the mother, because she's miscarried her baby. And the majority of miscarriages or pregnancy losses, as we prefer to use that term, happen because of nothing the mother has done at all. In fact, it's your body recognizing for the most part that your baby isn't compatible with life. And I just think there was such shame. There has been for such a long time surrounding the fact that these little babies were being lost and no one was talking about it because of that stigma, because of that feeling surrounding it. But now I'm noticing that that narrative is changing and we're seeing people, even I was saying to Sarah recently, even someone like Chrissy Teigen, who has such a large platform, and coming out and saying, this happened to me and this happened in, this was a second trimester loss. This is a really devastating thing that she was going through. And she was so brave and open and vulnerable to share that, but it helps you feel less alone. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really glad to see that the story is, it's shifting. And now there's a community of people out there willing to embrace you and say, talk about that baby. How did it feel to be pregnant with that baby? And I love that. I'm so glad it's headed in that direction.
I do think that people have a really hard time knowing how to respond when you tell them that you've had a pregnancy loss. And I think that part of the reason why it's probably been a sort of thing that's been kept secret is that you are looking to not have that uncomfortable moment of being like, oh, I actually, I'm not pregnant anymore. I, you know, lost the baby. And then it's like silent. And the person's like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. But like, they don't know how to communicate with you because they also don't necessarily, maybe they haven't experienced it. So they don't necessarily see it as a grief, like losing someone who was already earthside, right? Like that was already here with us. So, but actually it is like, there's so many, we grieve in so many different ways. And I do see it as pure grief. And I, you know, told Teresa this, but I had lost my dad when I was pregnant with my daughter Esme. And I think that going through that process of grief and understanding what that looked like and just it being such a big thing in my life by losing my dad, that when I had my pregnancy loss, like I really felt, I was like, oh, this is grief again. And I need to pay attention to it. And I need to treat it that way. I don't want to put it aside. I don't want to hide it. Like I need to talk about it. And then I also need to take care of myself because I understand that this is that my body's going to go through all the stages and it's not like you can stop it, but if you allow it to happen, you can really get through and try to, you know, help yourself heal. Mm-hmm. And so I think just grieving before actually helped me to understand that that's what this process was going to be and how you can be a friend in that is just to listen and be there. My friends sent me flowers and I was like, I was kind of embarrassed at first because I was like, is that? And then I was like, why am I embarrassed about that? Like, it's so beautiful that they thought of me and sent me flowers and there's nothing to be ashamed of, you know? And my other girlfriend like brought chocolate and wine over and we sat and cried and laughed and, you know, and so I think that there's a way that you can really show up for your friends just by being present, just sending a love note, you know, just in any way. But part of it, I think, is because of you're afraid of what someone's reaction might be.
Honey, you have anything to add to that?
I mean, for me, it was like when the miscarriages happened, it was like, I have one job to do, and that's to bring a baby into this world. And like, I'm broken because I can't do that. And like, it's somehow my fault. And that's why, like, when we were discussing having a third baby and I said, I don't want to carry again, is because I don't want to be the reason that my baby doesn't come to term. You know, like I want to give it its best shot because I think that like I'm broken somehow. Like there's, and it's just the women just carry that shame, even though, like you said, Teresa, it has everything to do with, but I'm like, but maybe it is me because I needed more progesterone, right? Like, my lining isn't good or whatever it is. It's like, but I don't want to be the reason that, like, I just don't feel like I'm woman enough or like, I just feel like a broken woman. So, yeah.
Yeah. And that's like the common thread that connects us, I think. Mm-hmm. And then it sees us through motherhood too. Yeah. I mean, that same self-critical voice follows us through the whole journey. Mm-hmm. And we really try to address that in our book, is just liberating ourselves from that, the judgment And the shame and the guilt that comes with this entire beautiful, colorful journey of parenthood.
So with all that said, everyone needs to get the Zen Mama Guide to Finding Your Rhythm in Pregnancy, Birth, and Beyond. Ladies, cannot thank you enough for such an awesome conversation. Let's all keep that family unit together. And I just appreciate, yes. I feel more Zen now. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks for sharing your hearts, lady. We appreciate
Zen
it.
Zen and validated.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. Thank you, ladies. Thank you, ladies. Appreciate you.
See you
all. Bye, guys. Bye. Thank you.
I love those girls.
The Zen and Mamas is like the perfect title for them.
Yeah.
Like they just seem just so
seen. I feel seen.
Yeah. And just like just the presence about them, even via a computer screen, is just so calming and confident and open.
Yeah.
That's really cool that they came out with all this stuff and again, giving women another resource, very useful resource to, you know, take you along the most empowering adventure that you could possibly go on.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Sure. Well, this was a fun episode. And I'm excited because next week we have two authors coming on. And since, you know, we talked about fighting earlier in the episode, their book title is Everyone Fights.
Everybody Fights. So why not do it better?
Exactly. Keep fighting the good fight, guys. And we'll see you next week.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.